This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
I'm Dave Kattenberg, and this is 12 Canadians Building a Better World from the Inside Out.
I'm asking you to join with the labor movement. My father worked in a unionized environment. My father, even in those times, were paid a decent wage and a decent... Does anybody in this room honestly believe that we would collectively succeed as a nation if it were not for the union? Do you honestly believe that the middle class would be established in isolation? We have a collective responsibility to one another. And that collective responsibility is to build a better nation. And I ask you to join with our union.
Hi. That. I was actually waiting for Air Canada. Did you come off the quarter flight?
Yeah, I did actually.
Okay.
Hey,
nice to meet you, Steve.
Hi, Ken. Nice to meet you.
Come
Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate that.
I'm Ken Lewenza, former president of the CAW National Union and a Windsorite, now enjoying retirement. The reason I'm taking this street, because this is my neighborhood. When I was born, I was born in this house right here, but it wasn't like that. That house looks like the Taj Mahal. See, I grew up with eight kids, and you'll see the addition from the porch back is not, that wasn't there. So it was just a three-bedroom wood house. It's really grown since then, and that was with eight children. So, four of us, four boys in one room, four girls in the other, and the parents working on a ninth kid in the other room. I didn't even know I couldn't get out of here anymore. This was historic, a working class neighborhood, mostly big three folks. And at that time, you know, we had a lot of large employers like Canadian Bridge, Dominion Forge, and you know, it was really unionized, middle class, industrial workers neighborhood. And the school I went to, the grade school, is just a few blocks away, you know, five or six blocks. In fact, at the end of this street, right at the end.
When I started entering the workforce at 16, first of all, you can get a minimum wage job anywhere, because that's where I started. You know, I had a young family and had to, I had to support them. You know, I was only 17 when my son was born, and my wife was 16, so I, you know, obviously it was easy to get a minimum wage job. Full-time, though, it wasn't precarious like today. And then when I was 18, I, you know, got the fortunate opportunity to work at Chrysler's. And you're right, the day I actually got hired at Chrysler's is the day that Canada Post called and a supplier called. And, you know, I had three options, but I went to Chrysler's because, you know, that was where my dad said I should be. And that's where I stayed for 41 years. So.
Yeah. Doubtful that a young person today would get three different offers on one day for a job.
Not good paying jobs, and doubtful that they would get it at all. I've been talking to a lot of students. The University of Windsor, for example, gave me an opportunity a couple months ago. They gave me a doctorate's degree in law. So I spent quite a bit of time with the students that graduated, and it was amazing to me that how many of
them... I'm more comfortable talking to people when I talk from my heart. And the reality is, brothers and sisters, you have accomplished a lot. When I think about this honorary degree, I think about it with a sense of humble. Do I deserve it? Why would they recognize Ken Lewenza? Why would they go to a grade 10 dropout that went to W.D. Lowe? And my high school teachers that are going to pick up the paper tomorrow and see I got an honorary degree are probably going to have medical care when they read this. Because I had teachers that said to me, Ken, we will give you a passing grade if you don't come to class. And then in grade 10, quite frankly.
Now, this is the large Chrysler plant. This is it for Windsor. This is the biggest employer and always has been. Mm-hmm. This plant is the plant that I started my career. They still have in combined about 4,500 unionized members in there. That includes everybody, truck drivers, jitney drivers, the whole caboodle, production, skilled trades, and another 1,000 salary folks, which would be non-union, bargaining, managers, engineers. So this plant in a population of
200,000 in Windsor. This plant employs almost 6,000 people. And that doesn't include the spin-off jobs, like this truck driver filling this. That, you know, that's not included, although those are CAW members. So this is the big plant here.
So 4,500 unionized workers. How does that compare with the old days, say the 60s, 70s?
Yeah, well, when I started in 1972, Local 444 had 12,000 active UAW members. But we also had three plants when I started. We had the Chrysler assembly plant here, then we had an engine plant, and in during the course of my career, they built the Paulette Road truck plant. So after the auto pact was dismantled, to be honest with you, I mean, the truck plant came in as a result of the auto pact, because Canada wasn't building any trucks. They were selling them, but wasn't building them. So at that time, Herb Gray was the industry minister from Windsor. I don't know if you ever heard of Herb Gray. He's one of the longest parliamentarians going. Anyway, he fought like a son of a bitch, and Chrysler's built the Paulette Road facility as a result of the auto pact, and good government policy, of course. It closed almost to the day when the World Trade Organization ruled that the auto pact was an unfair subsidy. So I'm going around here because you suggested you wanted to be close to my close to the plant that I was born in.
How you doing, sister? Okay, good.
So yeah, this is Windsor. I mean, this is the largest employer and always has been. Most generous, you know, to, and you know, like right today we have a United Way campaign, and you know, the commitment to the community is 5 million. That's the goal, and that'll show you how things have changed. When I ran the, when I was the co-chair of the United Way campaign 15 years ago, the goal was 10 million, and we met that goal. Today it's 5 million, and a lot of it is because of the significant reduction. Well, General Motors is gone now. They're not here anymore. And Ford. Ford at one time had 5,000 employees that on an annual per capita giving was number one in the country. Ford workers in this community gave $500 per year. So they were huge. So as a result of Ford going down to less than 1,000 employees, we've taken a hit, and General Motors gone. It had a huge impact on, you know, community campaigns like the United Way community campaigns that we've had historically.
I'm a son of eight children. I'm obviously got four sisters, three brothers. We had a three-bedroom home, was never owned. We had to fight for what bedroom we would sleep in. But the facts of the matter is I never did without. And why did I not do without? Because my father worked at Chrysler Corporation. My father worked in a unionized environment. My father, even in those times, were paid a decent wage and a decent benefit. And he allowed our family to go to school after every Labor Day with new clothes to make sure that we were fed. We never had all the fancy things in life, but brothers and sisters, I did without nothing. I absolutely had everything that I wanted in life. Family, friends, community. And at the end of the day, all of the material things don't mean a hell of a lot to me. So when I talk about my union today and talk to the graduates, I'm asking you to join with the labor movement, contrary to what career you may take, what path you may take, whether it's the corporate path, whether it's the human resource path.
So this is where I basically lived for the last, I don't guys, for about 15 years of my career right in here. I was a steward from 78 to 83. Then I became a committee person. Then I became a chairperson. And then ultimately I went to the vice president of the local union. So in the history of CAW Local 444, it will be rare to see somebody that held every position in the union in chronological order, from steward, committee person, chairperson, vice president, then of course national president. So this is, and all the reps are full-time today, and I'll briefly just go out to the assembly line just to show you the incredible pressure on workers.
It's a fascinating plant. We build 350 to 400,000 units a year here. We build a minivan. A minivan comes off the assembly line every 45 seconds. How you doing, buddy?
Kenny, how you doing?
You doing okay?
Well, there they are.
Good, good. I'm doing good. I'm doing good, man.
Good, good.
So it's an amazing place because imagine, and I wish I had the time or wish I pre-arranged it. How you doing, folks? How you guys doing? You doing okay?
Good, good.
Everything
good.
Under control?
Yep. Good.
So every, here, we'll take a walk this way.
Okay.
So every 45 seconds, the body shop loads the steel, of course, that starts the manufacturing, and it comes off the end of the line every 45 seconds. So this is a, what would I call it? This has been Chrysler's Corporation's lifeblood product, which is good for us. And this is the area I actually represented for most of my career. This is called the chassis division. So this is the chassis line, and again, it's lunch, but take my word for it. This place is 100 times cleaner than it was when I started here, and probably 100 times cleaner than when I left the plant. When I started here, there was, here, we'll go this way, there was material stock, material for future cars that were stacked to the ceiling in each, how you doing, buddy? How you doing, kid? That was stacked to the ceiling in every aisleway. So it looked like just a tunnel. You couldn't see the line because of the material. And over the years, because of the cost of inventory, we're just on time now. Most of these parts are just in time. So that really cleaned the place up. So being a representative in this place, one of the big issues constantly was pushing the company to clean the place up.
Yeah.
Whether it's maintaining washrooms, whether it's maintaining workstations, whether it's, that was, you know, that was probably 25% of a steward's responsibility, just getting the place cleaned up for health and safety reasons. And today it's just a natural part of the business plan, which is good for workers. But what goes along with this is this plant is totally lean now. When I say that workers work every 45 seconds, that's about how much time they have. So if there's any complication on doing their particular job, they don't have that spare time that we used to have. I mean, we didn't have the automation that we have today. We didn't have the technology. So, you know, a lot of jobs were not ergonomically designed, labor intensive. And over my career, for example, I was in this plant when they automated the paint shop. The paint shop was a tough place to work. Constantly had work stoppages because of fumes.
Yeah.
And the company totally automated the paint shop. So no longer is there any work stoppages in the paint shop because robots don't refuse to work because there's a leak in a pipe or something.
Yeah, so this plant might not be here today if things had gone a little differently during the crisis that you talked about.
Well,
before,
there's,
right?
Listen, there's no question. I don't know if you followed it, but you know, there was incredible pressure on government, and there was added pressure on the Canadian government because the Tories weren't in favor of supporting the auto industry. But Premier McGuinty in the province of Ontario in 2008 said, this is our economic wheel. You know, this is like oil in the West. So we can't lose the auto industry. So McGuinty come out and said that they would play an equal partner on a per capita basis to the United States. Ultimately, Harper came out, but none of that happened until two things happened. First of all, Sergio Marchionne still was not committed to take over Chrysler's. He was still in that review stage, and you might remember Obama said, if somebody doesn't come in and take over Chrysler's from another global company, then we're not going to support the financial package, because there was no, in his view, there was no way Chrysler's could stand up on its own. So Marchionne and I were pissing on each other in the press. And I don't know how that started, because it started by saying Marchionne's in for a rude awakening when he meets Ken Lawenza. Because Ken Lawenza's not innovative, he's not flexible, He's an old-style trade unionist. And Marchione would respond by saying, well, that ain't going to work in today's restructuring. How you doing, guys? That isn't going to work in today's restructuring. And so Tom Lasorda, who was the CEO of Chrysler Canada, who comes from Windsor, by the way, and as president, how you doing, guys, was the president of local, of his dad was the president of this local, actually came to my house. He was the president of CEO of Chrysler Canada, came to my house and said, you got to meet Marchione. Because even if Marchione took over Chrysler's, he didn't have to take over Chrysler Canada. There was two subsidiaries, Chrysler Canada, Chrysler US. So Lasorda brought Marchione into Toronto, met at a nice Italian restaurant, and you know, we ended the myth that I was inflexible. We ended the myth that Marchione would have trouble with the Canadian operations or the CAW. We had a good dinner, and then Marchione ultimately said that Chrysler Canada will be part of the plans if in fact the Canadian government comes to the pump, because it wasn't decided yet at that point. So then Tom Lasorda, to go back to your question, I had to sit in front of a financial advisory committee as the national president of the union, going to the federal government, asking for support of the auto industry. And all of us had to give presentation, the auto parts guys, the union, which was me, and Tom Lasorda, who was the president of Chrysler Canada. So it's funny, he gave a presentation directly in front of me, ahead of my presentation. And the finance committee, made up of parliamentarians, asked him a simple question. What happens if the federal government does not support the industry to the degree that you want us to? Because that's where they were leaning. He never even hesitated. He said there will be no Chrysler manufacturing in Canada if, in fact, the Canadian government doesn't provide support. So today, Chrysler Canada is the largest manufacturer of vehicles in Canada.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a stressful time, but it turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
When I started here, the work pressure might have been less, but it was much dirtier. You never had the equipment, you never had the tools, you never had what you need to build a car in these modern times. So everything was a battle. I mean, if the fender didn't fit right, they gave you a hammer. I mean, those days are gone now. The reality is everything is measured today, from work standards to equipment in the body shop, uptown, downtime. You can't get away from statistics. And this plant is one big statistic now. So, here, we'll go back to the car. This is my neighbor, Tim, who's never home anymore.
Hi. Good.
Quit your smoke. We've got forces out there today that want to change the rules that were put in place in 1945. And I ask the graduates here today, and I ask you an honest question. Does anybody in this room honestly believe that we would collectively succeed as a nation if it were not for the union? Do you honestly believe that the middle class would be established in isolation of the union fighting at the bargaining table on behalf of the combined membership and the community? Do you honestly believe that corporations would have just said, you know, I believe we should share in the profits and we should have good wages, benefits, conditions, pensions, all of the issues that are provided for today for the middle class? So brothers and sisters, when I look at you down there, I say to myself, what work have you accomplished? 4 years minimum of struggle. So this is the union hall.
Okay.
This is where I worked for as the vice president and the president for 15 years.
Okay.
I left the plant and I came here. This is the union hall and I have to drop something off. So that's why we're going in. So just come on in if you want.
One thing that I really wanted to ask you about was, you know, that 45 seconds for each vehicle.
Yep.
and the stress that comes with having to deal with that.
It is stressful, and we know this because we can't get information relative to individuals in terms of the medication they take, mm-hmm. but we know for an absolute fact that the medication around depression is number one. And that all comes with lean manufacturing. Right. It all comes with the push down to be over, to be the most productive plant. And it's tough on our folks. And it's tough on management too. When I say the production guys, because the management guys are all driven by measurements, right? In a lot of cases, the human element is taken out.
So is that the reason why you've been a big supporter of mental health initiatives?
Yes.
That's yeah. because you've had to deal yeah. with that, right?
Well, these folks will tell you, Debbie's worked for me didn't work for me. I actually worked for her for almost 20 years. Debbie's the most senior person here. This is a young man interviewing me from Ottawa.
Hi.
How are
who
you?
Wants to know me bit more.
To know you is to love
Sonia
you.
And this is Tina, but she's been around when I was immature and mature.
Oh, I got stories, and but I can't. They're not for that point.
Yeah.
So they're not for that
point. She's got stories. but anyway, so yes, they will tell you, this young lady will tell you, how many people came in here with mental disabilities.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was unbelievable. In fact, we had some of our members that we actually had to put a picture up to notify our staff to be careful when this person comes in. And Debbie will tell you, one of our members came in and seen me, and I took him instantly to the psychiatrist. I'll never forget this. I said, I'm taking you for a ride. I took him to a psychiatrist without an appointment, walked into the Giles place. The psychiatrist was so upset. First of all, he couldn't let him go because he was right out of it. So he pushed the panic button where the cops come instantly. The place was surrounded by police cars. And all the way out while they were taking him out, he was calling me every name. But you could think, you set me up, you son of a bitch. But that was a regular occurrence here. In fact, in this local, we don't like to talk about it a lot. Right in this office, right here, this was the office. Because this is an expansion. Charlie Brooks, the president of our first president, was killed. This guy. He was shot. Crazy member of the union that was fired with mental illness and with a history of violence, came in, shot, and killed our president right here. Now, fortunately, Debbie started after that. Mm-hmm. But all of the officers were in here, which wasn't me at that particular time. And it left a lasting mark on our staff, on our union, on our community. The biggest community funeral in the city of Windsor was this guy's. This is the history of our local.
Yeah, this is a big mural.
Yeah, this is local. This is local 200. This is Ford workers. And that's a Ford worker that did that mural, believe it or not.
Ah.
And they did it first. And this is the history right from the 40s, right up until that got up there probably 1995, 1996. So when they did it, 444 said, well, Jesus Christ, we can't let them do that. So we did the same thing. So the fella up in the left-hand side, see the paper in front of him? Mm-hmm. He was the fella that was shot, or the guy with the tie in the middle. And he was the president of this local for almost 20 years. And he was a pioneer. I mean, people will tell you today, if you ever look at the history of the labor movement, that he was probably the most visionary local union leader in Canada, because I mean he was fighting for peace during the Vietnam War days. He was a social housing advocate. He's the guy who built the culture of social activism in our community. From the United Way participation to social housing to unemployed help centers.
I want to build a better community. I want a community based on inclusiveness, opportunity, and raising expectations and raising hope. But brothers and sisters, down here, as I shut up, this cannot be done without the collective soul of each and every one of us digging deep, not just to succeed in our occupation, but dig deep about the collective good of our community, our nation, and our country, because we need you, brothers and sisters. You are the future. You're going to lead this country, and somewhere down the road, you might even be. Believe it or not, the worst time in my career was when I spoke publicly against the invasion of Iraq. And it was right after September the 11th, right? And, George Bush was talking about a crazy,
going to war, going after Sudan, chemical weapons, the whole caboodle. So I had a membership meeting, and I raised our opposition to the invasion of Iraq. And, you know, you could bring it up on the internet. Jesus. How you doing, folks? The Windsor Star just kicked the hell out of me. I mean, there was, and it was a tough couple months, because the emotions of September the 11th was still high. Mm-hmm. Most people wanted revenge. You know, racism started against, you know, Muslims and East Indians, or I guess anybody with dark skin. And I took a shit kick, and I always laugh to this day, because my mother still has six kids, because three of the kids actually passed away. Strong as hell, always was supportive of me. Well, in that particular time, even my mother didn't like me, because she was listening to the host, and she was believing that, you know, something had to be done, and we had to kill the Iraqis, and we had to kill anybody in Afghanistan, and if people were in Pakistan, let's kill them too. So it was a tough time, and I still got all the editorials, and to this day, I say to the editorial writers that are our members, by the way, mm-hmm. CAW members, who was right. So this is the Charlie Brooks Peace Fountain, and unfortunately, they just shut it off for the winter. This was a community initiative. I think it's a credit to his leadership that a trade union leader would be recognized for his peace efforts. And if you just read the, you know, the sign, you know, of course it talks about trade union leadership, but it talks about a community-minded citizen. But he was an incredible leader opposing war, and that's why it's called the Peace Fountain. But he was... this was his vision, green space for the community. This may be, in fact, I believe it is. It's the nicest park in the city now, and lots of traffic, as it is at the riverfront. But in large part, it was because of his vision. So if we could talk to trade union leaders of today's times and remind them that how relevant the labor movement was then, and how do we maintain that relevancy, is we still got to keep fighting for those community issues.
So brothers and sisters, what I ask you to do is work collectively with the labor movement, with the business community, with the not-for-profit communities, with your own profession. And what do I ask you to do here today? Let's have a commitment to each other that we're going to work on youth unemployment. Why can't we get all of the sectors together? Labor, business, not-for-profits, academics, and concentrate our efforts on youth unemployment. It is absolutely insane that we have the most highly educated workforce in the history of our country, yet 20 to 25% of our young people can't find a job. So we have to collectively change the mood. We have to collectively change the culture. And we have to collectively build on opportunities that are out there if we work hard at it. Opportunities do not come without hard work and without commitment. So in my closing remarks, brothers and sisters, I look at you. I want to go down and hug you, because you have made significant sacrifices. You have given of your time. You have made a commitment to yourself and your family that you're going to do something for yourself. You're going to have a decent income, I hope. You're going to be part of the society. You're going to work hard. You're going to get married, you're going to have kids, you're going to want a home, you're going to want a car, you're going to want to provide for your kids. But you can't do it as an individual. You have to do it as a result of the collective good that we can bring each other to build a better nation.
You've been listening to 12 Canadians Building a Better World from the Inside Out. Learn more about Ken Lewenza and his union work and subscribe to our podcasts at greenplanetmonitor.net. This story was created by Ottawa broadcaster Stephen Dale with the support of CKUW, University of Winnipeg Radio, and CFUV at the University of Victoria. 12 Canadians is produced by Earth Chronicle Productions, Winnipeg, Canada. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Bye for now.